Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam from the 7th canto, 14th chapter, entitled Ideal Family Life. And we should be on text number 17. Nahyagni mukato yang vai Bhagavan sarva yagya buk Idyeta havisha rajan Yata vipra mukhe hutaihi Nahyagni mukato yang vai Bhagavan sarva yagya buk Ejeta havisharajan Yata vipra mukhe hutaihi Nahyagni mukato yang vai Bhagavan sarva yagya buk Ejeta havisharajan Yata vipra mukhe hutaihi. Ladies, please. Moving on to the synonyms. Na, not. He, indeed. Agni, fire. Mukataha, from the mouth or the flames. I am this. Vai, certainly. Bhagavan, Lord Sri Krishna. Sarva Yagya Buk, the enjoyer of the results of all kinds of sacrifices. Ejeta is worshipped. Havisha, by offering of clarified butter. Rajan, O King, Yata, as much as, Vipramukhe, through the mouth of a Brahmin, Hutahi, by offering him first-class food. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the enjoyer of sacrificial offerings. Yet although His Lordship eats the oblations offered in the fire, my dear King, He is still more satisfied when nice food made of grains and ghee is offered to Him through the mouths of qualified Brahmins. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yagyartat karma na nacha loko yam karma bandhanaha. All fruitive activity should be performed for sacrifice, which would be directed toward pleasing Krishna. As stated elsewhere, Bhaktaranya Gitapasam Sarvaloka Hameshwaram. He is the Supreme Lord and Enjoyer of everything. However, although sacrifice may be offered to please Krishna, he is more pleased when grains and ghee, instead of being offered in the fire, are prepared as prasad and distributed first to the Brahmins, then to others. This system pleases Krishna more than anything else. Furthermore, at the present time, there is very little chance to offer sacrifices by pouring oblations of food grains and ghee into the fire. Especially in India, there is practically no ghee. For everything that should be done with ghee, people use a certain type of oil preparation. Oil, however, is never recommended for offering into a sacrificial fire. In Kali Yuga, the available quantity of food grains and ghee is gradually diminishing, and people are embarrassed that they cannot produce sufficient ghee and food grains. Under the circumstances, the Shastras enjoin Yajyaik Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Sumedasaha. In this age, those who are intellectual offer yajna, or perform sacrifices through the Sankirtan movement. Everyone should join the Sankirtan movement, offering to the fire of this movement the oblations of his knowledge and riches. This, in our Sankirtan movement, or Hare Krishna movement, we offer sumptuous prasad to the deity, and later distribute the same prasad to the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, and then to the people in general. Krishna prasad is offered to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and the prasad of the Brahmins and Vaishnavas is offered to the general populace. This kind of sacrifice, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and distributing of prasad, is the most perfect and bona fide way of offering sacrifice for the pleasure of Yajna or Vishnu. Om Yanatimarandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Yurve Maha Namam Vishnupadai Krishna Prashtai Putale Shri Mate Paladananda Swami Tavane Namam Vishnupadai Krishna Prashtai Putale Shri Mate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tavane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaurvane Vrayane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtyatya Hare Shatarine. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you for being here. It's always an honor to have some Vaishnavas to serve. And today's verse is actually very essential for us as aspiring devotees. What it's talking about here is the different ways that we can engage the tongue. I'll get to that later on. But the tongue is so important. The tongue is, it's the beginning of spiritual life. There's one book called the Upadeshamrita, or the Nectar of Instruction. It's a very, very important book. In the preface for this book, Srila Prabhupada wrote that this book should be the first instruction for all aspiring devotees. In other words, this should be the first thing that everyone should consult. The Nectar of Instruction has such amazing teachings in it, such amazing instruction, and it's applicable for everyone, no matter what level of advancement you may factually or imaginarily be placing yourself on. It has everything from the very basics for somebody brand new off the street, and it has people for them in the most advanced situations in spiritual life. And it truly is nectar. Reading through it, there's just so many wonderful verses and so many practical instructions that we can actually take to heart, that can tangibly help us in our everyday life. It's not like these Vedantists or Mayavadis or other speculators. Before I got interested in Krishna consciousness, I was doing a comparative study of major world religions and philosophies. And the thing that was getting me the most frustrated was how there was a lack of practical teaching. Everyone would be giving their commentary and their high-sounding ideals and principles and this thing and that. And everybody was talking around the issue. But nobody would ever actually get to the core of the issue and say, this is spiritual life, this is how it's practiced, this is how it's applied in your actual life. Rather, people would just speak these flowery words to make you feel good and make you feel like you're pseudo-spiritual and that you're actually getting some advancement, but in reality, you're just getting further embroiled in material existence. So when I finally came across Prabhupada's books, it was like a breath of fresh air. You know, because immediately in Prabhupada's books, it's practical. Everything is tangible and practical. It's not wishy-washy. It's not vague. It's just right there. So in the first text of the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami highlights some very important things. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaro pasta vegam, etan vegan yo visheheta dirak, sarvam apimam prittiving sasishyat. A sober person who can tolerate the urge of to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So right from the very first verse, Srila Rupa Goswami is describing how to become a perfect person. And these three things were mentioned. The urges of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. Prabhupada explains that these three organs are situated in a straight line. First comes the tongue, then the belly, then the genitals. And Prabhupada explains that simply by controlling the tongue, the belly and the genitals are automatically controlled. That's how important controlling the tongue is, which is what's being talked about in today's verse, the actions of the tongue. The actions of the tongue are tasting and vibrating. In the purport for this verse of the Nectar Instruction, Prabhupada goes into it more thoroughly. He says the demands of the body can be divided into three categories: the demands of the tongue, the demands of the belly, and the demands of the genitals. And that these are situated in a straight line. And so by limiting the activities of the tongue to eating prasadam and chanting the holy names, then the other two physical organs, the belly and the genitals, will automatically be controlled. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also talks about this in his famous prayer that we sing every day before we take prasad. Sharira vijijal, jadindriya taikal, jiwe pale visaya sagare, tara madhya madhya jiwati, lobam maya sudurmati, takajita katina sangsare, krishna bada dayamai, karibari jiwajai, swa prasad anadila bai, se anamrita kau, radha krishna gunagau, premida kau chaitanya nitai. O my Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or other, we have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment, and of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. That's what's mentioned here. Tara madhye jiva ti. Jiva, that's the tongue. It's very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world, but you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordships, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and in love, Call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. And getting more into the action of the tongue, there is another verse written by Srila Rupa Goswami from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. This is from 1.2.234. The verse is, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Na Bhaved Grahyam Indriyai Sevon Mukhe Hi Jiva Dao. There's that word again, Jiva. Jiva Dao. Swayam Eva Spuraktidaha. Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is. So once again, Srila Rupa Goswami is highlighting the importance of the tongue. You know, the tongue has these two functions, to taste and to vibrate. Prabhupada expands upon this further in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, seventh chapter in the purport of text 24. In this particular verse, it's talking about glorifying Krishna through prayers. And earlier in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining about Lord Anandadev with his unlimited heads and chanting since the beginning of the creation of this universe with all his unlimited heads the glories of the Lord and still not reaching the end of them. And about how Ananta Shesh will never reach the glories of the Lord because they're unlimited. Even chanting with his unlimited heads for the entire duration of the universe. So Prabhupada says it's not possible for an ordinary living entity to fully understand or glorify the unlimited personality of Godhead. But we can still offer prayers according to our own capacity. And he says that we can actually increase our capacity for offering prayers and understanding the glories of the Lord through the service spirit. And the service spirit is cultivated through this verse that I just mentioned, Sevan Mukhe Hi Jiva Dao. Meaning that this service begins with the tongue. This refers to both chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's pretty gross. Or in other cultures, eating intestine or other really horrible, disgusting things. So, as a living entity transmigrates from one form of life to another, there's so many things offered to eat, but in this human form of life, we're no longer bound by circumstance. We have the choice as to what it is that we can put in this body. That's one of the unique qualifications of having a human form of life, is we're no longer forced into animal circumstances. Humans have this greater degree of intellect, so we don't have to waste our entire life simply after survival. Just look at all this so-called advancement we've been able to make. So we actually have what's called leisure time. People go on vacations, they take breaks, they lounge around, they relax. Animals don't have that luxury. Animals are in a constant state of fear. Just look at any animals that you see anywhere in the world, whether it be the birds and squirrels and rats on the street, the cockroaches scurrying between buildings. They're all in anxiety. You go in Prabhupada's garden and look at the birds. They come down to the bird bath and they're constantly checking out the surroundings. Then they take a sip of water, then nervously look around again. They're in fear, they're in anxiety. But meanwhile, in that same garden, there's a devotee sitting on the bench, peacefully chanting japa. Because humans have this luxury. They don't have to be in constant anxiety, constant fear about their own survival. That's why in the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, Prabhupada translated as, now inquire into the nature of the Absolute. And the now, Prabhupada explains, refers to now that we have a human form of life. Because now we're qualified with proper intelligence to be able to grasp and understand the real significance of our existence. We're not under constant pressure of this fear factor. So without anxiety, we can comprehend higher subject matters. And that's why it's so important in pursuance of this that we put the proper edibles into our body to further accentuate this, so we don't have to be forced into lower species of life. That's why Prabhupada says, chanting is the medicine and prasad is the diet. Because we're all here in this material world, it's like we're in a disease condition. And the spiritual master is the doctor. He's prescribed us a remedy. He's given us instructions on how we can get better, how we can rectify this disease condition of existence. And so the medicine is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and the diet is Krishna prasad. Prabhupada says, with these processes one can begin his service, and as the service increases, the Lord reveals more and more to the devotees. But there is no limit to his glories, and there is also no limit to engaging oneself in the service of the Lord. And so then one last reference to this verse of Sevon Mukhe Hiji Wadao. There's a reference to this actually concerning the Damodar Lila, which considering it's Kartik, I thought it'd be nice to share. It's from the 10th canto, the Bhagavatam, 9th chapter, text number 15. Translation is, when Mother Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by the distance, the width of 2 fingers. Thus she brought another rope to join it. Purport. I'll just read the purport because it's short. Here's the first chapter in Krishna's exhibition of unlimited potency to Mother Yashoda when she tries to bind him. The rope was too short. The Lord had already shown his unlimited potency by killing Putana, Shakatasura, and Trinavarta. Now Krishna exhibited another vibhuti, or display of potency, to Mother Yashoda. Unless I agree, Krishna desired to show, you cannot bind me. Thus, although Mother Yashoda, in her attempt to bind Krishna, added one rope after another, ultimately she was a failure. When Krishna agreed, however, she was successful. In other words, one must be in transcendental love with Krishna. But that does not mean that one can control Krishna. When Krishna is satisfied with one's devotional service, he does everything himself. Sevon mukhe hiji vadao swayam eva spuratidaha. He reveals more and more to the devotee as the devotee advances in service. Ji vadao. This service begins with the tongue, with chanting and with taking the prasad of Krishna. So, that's why this one thing, the jiva, the tongue, is so important. That's why it's stressed so heavily in this verse, in today's verse, about how the perfection of this Sankirtan movement is simply chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and distributing Krishna Prasad. Prabhupada says in the last sentence of today's verse of the purport, this kind of sacrifice, chanting of the Hare Krishna Mantra and distribution of Prasad, is the most perfect and bona fide way of offering sacrifice for the pleasure of Yajna or Vishnu. And we already have this established here in this temple. We have the deities here that are offered bhoga every day. By their mercy, they transform it into delicious mahaprasad. Every day we cook so much prasad for the restaurant. It's offered to the Radha Govinda deities in Savasa's apartment. All the customers that come to the restaurant, they're getting this prasad that Prabhupada's describing here. Food that's first been offered to the deities to make a prasad, then it's offered to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and then it's offered to the general populace. This is the Sankirtan movement. This is the process. It's very simple. So it's important not to lose sight despite the simplicity. Because it is so simple, sometimes people forget that this is actually the process. It's not a difficult process. It's not something that requires some convoluted process or some extreme endeavor. It's a simple process requiring simple endeavor. But sometimes our mind, out of a desire for complexity, tries to think that there's something more that we're missing out on. But really, we have to remember that it's about the basics. These are the basics: chanting Krishna's holy names and distributing Krishna prasadam. That's why in that one verse from the CC, in the Adi Lila, when it's describing the activities of Advaita Acharya's house, about how every night he would invite various Brahmins and Vaishnavas to his home for the purpose of prasadam distribution, and then they would have some Krishna Katha. And after the Krishna Katha, they would have, as Prabhupada explained, at minimum 3 hours of kirtan every night. And in the purport, Prabhupada explained that this is the simple and effective means of engaging or participating in this Sankirtan Yajna, the Sankirtan movement. And that simply by doing this, inviting Brahmins and Vaishnavas to your home and chanting the holy names, you'll become firmly fixed in the Sankirtan movement. And you'll be assured of making spiritual progress. So I'll end there. If there's any comments or questions, Anthony Prabhu.
Thank you for the class. I'm Kar Prabhu. I was just wondering, you were saying to, if we just take Krishna Prasad, so we're automatically controlling the tongue. So where do we draw the line? What if you're eating too much Prasad just to satisfy the tongue?
Well, the devotees actually brought that up to Prabhupada. Bhrigu was the one who showed me. He showed me the verse from the Vedabase. It wasn't a verse, it was a section from a conversation or something like that, where the devotees asked Prabhupada that very question, saying, Prabhupada, you know, isn't it bad for devotees to overindulge in prasadam? And Prabhupada countered by saying, no, this is good. but it's not very good. Very good is to control the quantity, how much you eat. But still, overindulging in prasadam is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. So don't get confused. Don't think that I'm doing a bad thing by overindulging in prasadam. There's a very specific reason for prasadam being there. Prasadam is it's a safety net. It's a necessary function for all beginning devotees. You know, it's just like somebody who's walking the high wire, you know, a tightrope very high above the ground. They have a safety net below them. The purpose of that safety net is to catch them from killing themselves from falling. You know, if they're like 100 feet off the ground walking a tightrope and they slip, they're going to die if they hit the ground, so they have a big safety net there to catch them. So prasadam is like this safety net for devotees. Because in Krishna consciousness, we restrict our senses. We limit the amount of sense gratification by refraining from intoxicants, refraining from illicit sex, refraining from gambling, and refraining from eating meat. Which basically eliminates all avenues of sense gratification that most materialistic people seek shelter with. So what options are there left for devotees for gratifying their senses? Not many. Especially in the beginning when devotees don't have that much taste for chanting the holy names. So really the only avenue that's left is through eating. So oftentimes when new devotees come and they feel anxious and frustrated because their enjoying spirit is being hampered and their mind starts to race and cause all kinds of problems. So that's why from the stories I've heard that what was his name? The famous devotee that pioneered Ratha Yatra? Jayananda, yeah. But Jayananda Prabhu, when he was temple president in San Francisco, he always had his famous peanut butter halava on hand. It was always available. And he told any devotee that was thinking about blooping that before you bloop, gorge yourself on this peanut butter halava. Before you make your choice, eat to your neck until it's up to your neck, this peanut butter halava. And then think about it again. And more often than not, devotees would stay after doing that. Because it's just a simple thing. The mind is freaking out. Old patterns are being broken and you're having to forge new patterns in the mind. Because we're conditioned souls. Just like there was those famous behavioral experiments conducted by this Russian scientist called Pavlov. He had this dog and he was doing behavioral experiments to where every time he would feed his dog, he'd ring a bell first. He called it conditioned response. And so he'd ring the bell and then feed his dog, and that went on for several months. And then to test the conditioning, he would ring the bell but not feed the dog. And he saw that whenever he would ring the bell, his dog would automatically start to salivate. In other words, he'd conditioned his dog into a pattern of behavior. Because the dog expected food whenever he'd hear a bell ring. In the same way, we've been conditioned by this material nature to respond in certain predefined patterns through many millions of previous births in this material world. To where when we experience a certain stimulus from the material world, we respond in a certain pattern. In other words, we're conditioned. We're souls that are conditioned to respond to this material world. And it takes reconditioning, namely through practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. It reconditions our consciousness, our soul, to respond in a different way And that's why this process can be difficult, because we're reconditioning ourselves to respond to a spiritual set of circumstances rather than a material set of circumstances. And in that initial process where you're doing the major reconfiguration of your consciousness, sometimes the mind can just freak out and go berserk. So it's never a bad thing to overindulge in prasadam. Don't ever get that idea. Prabhupada said it's a good thing. But it's not a very good thing. Eventually we come to the point where we're getting some taste in spiritual life and where it's no longer necessary to overindulge in prasadam. At that point, one should begin endeavoring to restrict, to reduce the amount of prasadam that we take. Just like Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. He's the example of this. He started off eating normally. But gradually, over the course of time, gradually, he reduced more and more according to his level of spiritual realization. It's not that we can just jump to, you know, eating sunlight or eating air all of a sudden. Oh, you know, I'm a breatharian now. Just see how spiritually advanced I am. Everyone bow down and touch my feet. No, it's not like that. Of course, according to false ego and pride, people would like to do that. And I've seen people try that before. Not eating only air, but, you know, eating leaves and twigs. And it's ridiculous. Because it's not practical. It's not based upon actual spiritual advancement. It's based on false pride. Because they want to be recognized as more than what they are. So it's important to do it according to your level of spiritual realization. There's nothing to be ashamed about. There's nothing to be embarrassed about eating a lot of prasadam. But as much as we can, according to our spiritual realization, we should try to restrict, try to control how much we actually eat. Is that okay? Try. Anyone else? Try. Grantraj Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai.